Hello and welcome to the eHotelier podcast, bringing you insights from hotel industry leaders around the world.
I'm your host, Matthew Stevens, and today we'll be taking a look at technology and travel. My guest today is chairman of the Crumbs Project, a charity that provides catering and hospitality training to education for adults with a range of disabilities. He's visiting professor at University of Derby in the UK and St. Pol de Mar in Barcelona, as well as being a director of HOSPA, owner of Wentworth Jones Consultancy, and dean of the Hotelier Academy. Welcome, Professor Peter Jones. Thanks for joining us today.
Matthew, thank you very much. Delighted to be here.
Peter, it seems so long ago now that we released your report, Hospitality in the Post-COVID-19 World, back in May last year. The report covered a range of topics exploring the impacts of COVID-19 on the industry. In our past two episodes, we've covered the impacts on society and culture as well as the economy. So today we'll be looking at the impacts of technology on travel. Technology has been seen as a tool supporting business processes in the past, particularly in an industry so reliant on service. We've seen a new pace of technology evolution as a result of COVID, where technology is now seen as vital to business success. How do you think technological advances are impacting on the hospitality and tourism industries in response to the pandemic?
Well, clearly, the speed of acceleration, as you mentioned, in terms of the developments has been tremendous. And because the pandemic has created an environment in which we are seeing rapid change. We're seeing rapid change in everything that we do, but particularly we're seeing rapid change in the development of technologies, whether that's a vaccine on one hand, yeah, or whether it's the way that we actually use AI, artificial intelligence, in the other. So all of these things are actually, there's a sort of confluence of technological development which is actually taking place, huge impetus into finding different ways of actually doing things, some of which we've had to do in order to exist, and certainly as far as businesses are concerned, they've had to adopt the use of technology, particularly for things like communication tools, but also in the way that they're actually communicating now remotely, much more remotely, with a potential customer base. So we're seeing huge changes in the way that that technology is actually being used. And I think some of the things that are beginning to emerge from that, obviously they're going to be very long lasting. We're not going to go back to anything that we had before. So technology is always looking to move things forward. But one of the big issues, I think, that's becoming more obvious is the way that connectivity is, and technology, especially communications technology, needs to be based on a broadband infrastructure.
Right.
And if you haven't got a broadband infrastructure that works, then you haven't got these opportunities. I mean, there's been arguments, of course, saying that broadband should be treated as a utility. It's like turning the tap on, or because it's almost essential to the way that we work now. Mm. And people are now increasingly having to do everything online, whether it's booking their vaccine appointments or checking their bank statements or whatever it might happen to be. They're all using technology in order to interact with both agencies, utilities, other customers, potential suppliers, and so on. So there is an interesting argument that says all internet then, we need that infrastructure, that internet-based infrastructure, in order for all of this technology to work. And that doesn't matter whether you're talking about robotics, because invariably you're either using some form of internet-based technology in relation to the robotics, either controlling them or indeed feeding data from them. Mm. So it doesn't really matter, I think, what you don't have technology that acts in isolation anymore. It's always part of a much, much bigger base, internet sort of structure. So the big change, I think, is going to be, there could be political, economic changes, but it's going to be, how do we ensure that we improve the quality, the speed, and the security of the basic infrastructure infrastructure, technological infrastructure that we all require now to exist.
Sure. So a critical part now, like water and power, now the internet is not just supporting communication and nice to have communication, it's supporting critical infrastructure. International travel appears to be on the rocks. Do you think there's any hope of recovery in 2021?
I'm normally quite optimistic, but under these circumstances, I think international travel is going to be on the rocks for some considerable time. Mm. Everybody now is looking much more introspectively, inwardly within where they live in terms of travel. There are even some restrictions within travel within your own country or within your own continent, for example. Mm. So international travel is, even though people might say, oh, there's a huge pent-up demand for it, there may be a pent-up demand, but there's also a huge set of risks. And what we haven't done yet is properly mitigate the nature of those risks. And until we can mitigate the nature of those risks internationally, we're not going to see international travel come back to anything like its previous levels. And I would be suggesting it's at least 2024 and presumably nothing much else happening that's going to allow for that travel to be, in terms of frequency of flying and so on, or frequency of travel, to go back to or any sort of pre-pandemic level.
Mm. So the big areas of the industry that'll be hit are obviously business travel, major event travel, aside from the international leisure. We've seen through technology, events and conferences are now being done online, not just in small scale, but major international events are now being held virtually. Do you see that becoming more important, technology supporting that mass gathering, a mass event infrastructure?
Yes, I do. And that's becoming much more sophisticated. And that's a good example of fairly rapid technological development that's taken a technology that may have been seen at some point as being fairly sort of embryonic in its potential. Mm. And it's just grown exponentially to be able to cope with all of these things.
Yeah.
But that, again, is entirely predicated on having the utility infrastructure of the internet to be able to make it happen.
Sure.
So, but that is, those things are going to become more and more major features in the way that we behave and we interact, certainly as far as big conferences and events and so on are concerned. And certainly, yes, there will be opportunity for people when they come back, and that nature of that human interaction is always going to be very important to them. But ultimately, it's going to be constrained and conditioned by mitigation of risk. My whole point again, and whilst you've still got a major health pandemic on a global scale, there is still going to be really significant risks. And it's, the question then is, how do you minimise and mitigate those risks to make people feel that they have the confidence to travel? Mm. And that's the issue. How do you get that degree of confidence? And what we're beginning to see in things like cruise line bookings for the over 55s, if you take the UK-based company Saga as a good example, they are saying now that, yes, you can book a cruise, but you've got to have proof of vaccination before we will accept your booking or before you can come on one of our cruises. Well, that's all very well and good, but then, of course, that only means that you might feel that you are in some way, you're mitigating your risk. But what about everybody else who you're coming into contact with and where you're going and so on?
Yeah.
So it's not as easy as it might sound. You know, I've got a vaccination passport, I can go anywhere. Yeah, you might be able to go anywhere, but you're going to places where they haven't got a similar level of healthcare, for example.
Sure.
So there's all of this which is swirling around, and it's not simple. It has to be very nuanced in terms of people's understanding of what the risks really are in traveling, and what the legal requirements might be on you. For example, one, I can't fly to Australia at the moment, even if I wanted to. Costs are probably prohibitive as well. But, you know, I would then have to quarantine for 14 days on arrival. I might spend 3 days meeting up and doing business, I fly back and I've now got to quarantine for 14 days when I get back home again.
Sure.
So, you know, to a month out of my life for 3 days, for a 3 day conference.
Yeah.
Forget it.
Not
going to happen.
Yeah. So during the pandemic, the industry's obviously scaled back its human resources. We've seen furloughs and hotels closing and restaurants closing. And many of the professionals that have been furloughed are seeking careers in other industries just for continuity of employment, but also that hospitality people are desirable. We've got high service levels, good business ethics. Do you think when demand comes back, maybe in 12 months' time or however long it takes, that we're going to now face a talent crisis? And how do you think we're going to address this?
I think we will face a bit of a talent crisis because people aren't prepared to hang around and wait. They're going to look for employment in what they may well consider to be slightly more secure opportunities or industries. So we will face something of a talent crisis because there will be a dearth of people around. What we've got to do is to ensure a number of things. One, we've got to make sure that the industry is seen as being a very good career option for new entrants to come into the industry. So it's got to be promoted as in a way of professionalism, of longevity, because a lot of people see hospitality and the travel tourism industry as a young person's game and, you know, I'll do it until I'm 30 and then I'll find a proper job, you know, rather than actually seeing it as being a proper career opportunity that can take you all the way through. And so we've got to change the perception, public perception. And that's going to be hard because if they're closed, it's a bit difficult. But nevertheless, you've got to have the public perception that it is a good professional, good career opportunity. I think you've got to then target that at the new entrants, the potential new entrants, and you've got to train and train again.
Yeah.
And so you've got to invest in education, you've got to invest in training, and you've got to invest in those people, because and that is something that as an industry traditionally, some have been very good at it, but others haven't, because they've always assumed that there will be somebody off the street that I can employ.
Yeah.
So they've never really felt, and I'm not, this is, you know, huge over-exaggeration in many ways, but, you know, there are parts of the industry that have always invested heavily in staff and invested in training, but there are other parts of the industry that have always assumed that there will be somebody walking past on the street that I can grab in and do the job. Now, one of the issues I think that we're going to be facing is that the nature of the training is obviously going to have to change. So they're going to have to become much more flexible, much more innovative as members of staff, committed to a different style of operation, perhaps a different type of team interaction. They're going to have to be able to use a lot more of the different types of technology in a way that they might have not done before. And they're still going to have to deliver a very personalized service to the guest at the end of that. So the training itself and the education behind that is really going to have to think through now, what is it that we are really going to look for? And I think from the work I've looked at and done, it's more about creativity, innovation, flexibility, the ability to respond quickly to events, to be able to interact with empathy with your team members, empathy with your customers, and so on. So, yes, those are soft skills. On the professional skills side of it, you're going to have to rethink through what professional skill levels you're actually talking about here. And I would argue that you need to upskill those professional levels rather than de-skill them.
Yeah.
Because if you upskill, then you create a different type of environment. You have a different type of individual, which is a good thing, because then they often do develop that creativity and innovation. They can take decisions, in quick decisions in different types of circumstances and situations. They become a much more valuable and valued members of the team rather than purely an operative.
So rather than technology replacing service, service is really taking another step up, and technology becomes a facilitator of contactless interactions.
Yes. And I think what we need to do is to be able to use the technology to improve the personalization of the service.
Yeah.
So if we can use the technology to improve the nature of the service experience, improve the way that the staff interact with the customer, either using technology or on a face-to-face situation, but it's about personalization of that.
Yeah,
and that's got to be absolutely crucial to it. So, I mean, I think your point is well made. But we really got to think about how we do that. And of course, we should be thinking about it now.
Mm.
We should be thinking about how we make those changes now, not how do we do it in 18 months or 2 years' time, because by then it's going to be a bit late, and we may have lost opportunity. And we really do need to get our acts together, I think, in terms of creating the right environment to promote the industry, really think in detail about what the skill sets are that we're really going to need in the future. How are we going to develop those skill sets? How are we going to engage with a new potential workforce? Mm. And also engage with the existing workforce, because a lot of those skill sets will need upgrading at the same time.
Sure. So as chairman of Crumbs, a charity that provides catering and hospitality training and education to adults with disabilities in the UK, how are you managing to continue to provide education through a crisis to prepare these professionals for recovery?
Well, we're doing it entirely by moving it into the digital space at the moment, because we aren't allowed to provide that some professional practical training, if you like, on a hands-on basis, because we have to be closed. Mm. But what we have done is we've engaged with our trainees in a different way. And what we found, interestingly enough, and these are people that have often been disregarded or they've been marginalized through either their learning difficulties or their mental health problems. So they've never really had opportunities to blossom, perhaps, in the way that we are finding they are. They are actually much better digital natives than we give them credit for. They will, providing they've got the access to the right tools, they're good at adopting new technologies. They engage with each other. So that's one of the most interesting things. When I talk about teams and building teams, it's not the same as the old-fashioned team-building type of exercises, but you can still do team-building exercises using the digital technology in the digital space. And the other thing about them is that you actually get a much broader interaction across all of them, because they often meet people that otherwise they wouldn't meet.
Mm.
But they're meeting them digitally.
Mm.
And so you're establishing a different types of relationships with them, albeit, yeah, they know what they look like, they can talk to each other, and they often do talk to each other long after the formal meeting's finished. Mm. They will still be there chatting to each other in that sort of digital environment. They become much more familiar with how you do that. So that's what we've done, and I think that for us has actually proven to be much more successful than I initially thought it would be. I thought we'd just be able to keep some sort of limited engagement with them, but actually not the case at all. Mm. If you take what we were doing, they would have come to us for, say, 8 hours a week. Now, in terms of their digital engagement, it probably is about 30 hours a week. And a lot of it's just informal.
Right.
Between themselves. But yeah, it's still there. And, of course, what they have then is that more of that overarching sense of belonging to a group. So it's that group dynamics that we're beginning to see happening in a way that I'd never anticipated.
Mm. It's a fascinating project, Crumbs. And thank you very much for sharing your views with us today, Peter. If you'd like to learn more about Crumbs, you can visit crumbs.org.uk. It's an amazing project, and I wish you all the very best through the pandemic and through educating these very valuable members of our community. Thanks for joining me today, Peter.
Matthew, thank you very much indeed.
To build your own career or boost your team's performance from basic skills to executive training, visit academy.ehotelier.com. Get 20% off all courses and certifications using the code PODCAST. Thank you for joining us. Check out the latest episodes at ehotelier.com and make sure to subscribe for the latest insights from industry leaders around the world.